This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, Brett Weinstein. Last we did this, we were in London at the ARC conference about a month or 5 weeks ago or so, and we agreed to do it again. So here we are, and you're in a suit this time. I've never seen you this professional. I don't think I've ever seen you wearing a tie. Are you going into a new line of work? What's going on here?
Well, Dave, we are at war, and I think it's incumbent on us to dress appropriately.
We are at war at some level, I think, sort of across the board. We're at war with our institutions, we're at war with our sense-making apparatus. We seem to be politically at war with everybody. I guess, why don't we just start there? What is on your mind the most at this very moment?
Well, I am concerned that we are in a kind of war that none of us have seen previously, and that this is a war that actually must be won, that were we to fail to win the war to, I don't even think defending the West is possible at this point, but to rekindle it from what remains. If we lose that war, then where we're going, I think, is unsurvivable for the species, really. And, you know, I wish there was more nuance about it, but that is how it looks to me.
All right, so let's do the black pill first. So what is the black pill? Where is it that you see us going that if we don't rekindle, we are going to end up at? What does that place look like to you?
As we may have talked about in London, there are really two bases on which you could run a civilization. One of them involves just simply narrowly trying to advance your genes into the future at the expense of other people's genes. And that looks like lineages battling with each other. Sometimes it's genocide, sometimes it's war, sometimes it's more cryptic than that, but it really is about what we have come to call race. And then there is what...
That's sort of the battles of the old days in some respects.
Yes, that was all there was for a very long time. And in fact, that is the crucible that shaped our species. And it happens that in more recent history, we've discovered a better way, and that involves putting aside lineage-level concerns and collaborating with people who are in a position to be good collaborators. Really, that idea has to take over the whole world. That is humanity's future, if we're to have one. And unfortunately, I think what has happened is that what allowed a civilization based on reciprocity to thrive was a commitment to the consent of the governed. And the problem is, for the rent-seeking elites that have hoarded so much power, the idea of the consent of the governed is very frightening, because it can take power away from them at any moment and ward it to somebody else. And, you know, that is indeed a frightening prospect, but they've conspired against it. And what is going to happen is that beautiful system, which, you know, we never completed, but the system that was being erected in the West, when it collapses, it's going to return us to that lineage against lineage conflict, because that is the more fundamental, more stable state. And unfortunately, if the world returns to that mode with present level of technology and weaponry, we aren't going to just get through it and 100 years from now emerge to rediscover what we once knew. I really don't think we'll be here.
All right. Now, everyone watching this knows that I'm not going to let you just black pill us the whole time. And I know that that's not your intention. And actually, your life's work is to not do that at all, but just to give the devil his due and do as much of what you just discussed as we can. So would you say it's something like we've had, you know, 250 plus years of the Enlightenment that got us past much of the tribal stuff, and now we're just at the end of it? Does this feel inevitable where we're at the moment, especially if you look at what's happened, you know, since October 7th, where we're now seeing a new version of tribalism burst forth? Does it seem like the obvious end of Enlightenment liberalism?
unfortunately,
something that guys like you and I tried to defend very hard before it was cool, I guess.
Right, and while there was still more
some
opportunity,
juice. Yeah.
It's now later, unfortunately, yeah. in that history. But I think it was not inevitable, but in order to avoid it, we needed to recognize what we had and not delude ourselves about how complete the job had been. In other words, recognizing that we had effectively discovered the broad structure that we needed to live by and had never fully achieved it, right? Obviously, the founders of the American experiment simultaneously understood that nobody needed to be given advantage over anybody else, or it was essential that they not have advantage over anybody else. At the same time, they preserved slavery. So It was never perfect. It was at best a prototype. But we had to recognize what that prototype implied about what kind of world we could have, and then we needed to defend it with everything we had. We needed to defend it, and we needed to, I don't even want to say complete it, because that implies that you're going to get there.
Right, and really there's no there.
You're going to approach it,
yeah.
Right? And you're going to get to a place where the gap between the system you have and the system that you're trying, that you're shooting for, is so small it's not worth messing anything up over.
What do you think the closest we've ever got to that was? Like, I always say on the show now, if we could just reverse it to 1995, we're probably pretty good.
Well, yes and no. I think 1995... is not a bad estimate of the closest we got, right? And just as a proxy for it, the degree to which one's race, for lack of a better term, mattered was probably at a low ebb at that point.
Yeah.
It didn't matter at the level of zero. It mattered, right? And certain races mattered more than others. But everybody understood, all of the decent people understood, that it was desirable to have a world in which everybody had access to the market, nobody was barred because of where they came from. And we have now lost touch with that, obviously. We've embraced the idea that nothing matters more. And of course that is going to produce a revival of all of the ancient rivalries and a bunch of new ones. And it just doesn't look survivable. And what's more, I think if you could just simply teleport everybody for a couple of days into the future that they are toying with delivering us all to, they would recognize instantly that the loss that they were contemplating was just unthinkable.
What if you could teleport the other way? So what if we could teleport to 1995, assuming it's a roughly, it's not the exact year, but ballparking that things were better? What would you tell the people of 1995 you're supposed to do in the face of this? Because that's what I keep coming back to. A bunch of us were screaming about this. Clearly that wasn't enough.
Yep.
So what would you tell the people of 30 years ago? How are you going to fix this?
That is an extremely difficult thought problem. And in fact, I fear that the answer is short of, by the way, I'm from the future. I know you're not going to believe that, but if you can get over that one thing, if I can establish that one thing for you, then I've got a message about what's about to happen and what you have to do to prevent it and why it matters, right? That you could do. But if there's no way to convey, hey, actually, I've seen where this goes and it's not good.
Right, so you need Marty telling Doc that he fell off the toilet to figure out the flux capacitor, but short of that, we're kind of screwed.
I think so, because I know, you know, actually, it's funny. Heather and I have a little just sort of private thought experiment, you know, because we knew each other in high school. I'm often saying to her, don't you wish that we could just tell our high school selves about the present and what would they say, right? And the answer is, it's not plausible.
Yeah.
The idea that we would get here is unimaginable, and I think people, I don't want to say would rightly reject the message because it would sound too preposterous, but of course it would. I mean, we're fighting about whether men can become women, whether, you know, pedophilia is a sexual orientation that you can do nothing about and we should be tolerant of, whether 2 + 2 really equals 4. I mean, literally, there is nothing left that we can agree on. Nothing.
So, okay, so short of being able to prove that you were from the future, is there anything in retrospect that we could have done? Again, that's the thing that I still seem to be hung up on. Is this all inevitable, that the system was going to collapse, the algorithms were going to grapple hold of us, the rent seekers, as you're talking about, and the elite, like all of it was inevitably going to get us to this civilizational moment?
Well, There are a couple things that go into it which were probably necessary ingredients, and so maybe if you could prevent one of them, you'd be somewhere better. And the two that come to mind most directly, I think there was a terrible misstep with atheism. And what it did was it unhooked a set of protections, some of which really weren't no longer necessary, many of which were still essential, but for reasons that were not literally explained in the documents in question. And I know because for a while, I was pretty close to the only evolutionary biologist trying to bridge this gap and speaking to religious people and saying, look, my colleagues are telling you you're sick with a mind virus. I know that's not right. Doesn't mean that what you think took place literally happened. And we have to have that conversation. What if what you believe is important but not literal, right? Getting there from an evolutionary perspective, if we could have done that earlier and not temporarily flirted with the idea that, you know, simple atheism was somehow a sophisticated way of navigating through life, then maybe we could have, maybe those people who had longstanding traditions that contained wisdom that might have prevented this would have had more power when it mattered. I really think that's
so, so you must be pleased then in that there doesn't seem to be much of an atheist movement left in America. I don't know if pleased is the right word, but it does, you know, I think that the Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson debates sort of put an end to that movement in America.
As they should have, but yeah. I'm not thrilled with what I'm seeing replace it. And I think there's a, you know, let's put it this way. If we take your question about what could we have said to the people of 1995 to get them to save us from the world of 2023, the coming calamity that is going to happen if we just simply embrace the religious doctrines, philosophies, and values of the past and hope that we can now ride out the storm, that's when we could stop now by having a conversation that says, look, it was wrong to dispense with these compendiums of wisdom that we've been handed in all of these traditions. But those compendiums of wisdom were built by natural selection in an environment we no longer live in. And so we are stuck in a terrible problem, which is you can't embrace the solutions of the past to get out of the problems of the present, and you can't abandon the solutions of the past because they're outdated, because you'll end up abandoning all sorts of stuff that matters in ways you don't know about. So that is, I don't want to candy coat it.
Yeah.
There's no simple solution to that that doesn't involve repeatedly injuring ourselves as a civilization as we discover which fraction of those traditions is still relevant, which fraction has become toxic and inappropriate, what it should be replaced with. That's a very long-term puzzle that you can only solve if you're careful about it. There's no solution you can deliver in the present and say, here's the subset of those traditions that's still relevant. Here's the part that needs to be replaced. Here's what it needs to be replaced with. That's an evolutionary process that's going to do it.
What does that tell you about the evolutionary process of the forces that have led us here on the negative side? So if the forces on the positive side and the ideas of classical liberalism, let's say, and the things that have been good for the 250, the last 250 years, if those are pretty good but clearly faltering, what does it tell you about the bad ideas that somehow got into the system?
There are a couple of concepts. Maybe I'll step back 1 second. What we teach people, even before the academy went completely insane, the set of things that we would teach somebody on the way to graduating from college was pretty arbitrary. It was not the set of things that you would really want to have on board in order to live a life in which you were empowered to do meaningful things. It was just sort of some set of things that people had taught in the past and seemed like they were still useful.
Are you saying lesbian badminton 201 isn't
No, I mean even really almost everything. You know, yeah. We don't teach the right geology, frankly, in order to understand what kind of a planet you live on. The biology we teach is not focused on the things that actually allow you to figure out how to evaluate claims about a medication or a food, or we are teaching an arbitrary curriculum, and it's now gotten, and it's turned into a toxic curriculum. But arbitrary wasn't very good. And so one of the things that
But do you think that was arbitrary, or do you think that was by design? I mean, when all the liberal arts colleges started teaching all of this nonsense instead of teaching, I don't know, say either better at STEM subjects or financial literacy, let's say, yep, which nobody learned in high school, and then they get to college and then they don't even teach it. Is that arbitrary, or is that intentional?
The last chapter clearly involves a whole hell of a lot of sabotage. And mm-hmm. frankly, you know, the folks who invented postmodernism were pretty straightforward about the fact that they were interested in sabotage, so it shouldn't surprise us. But I mean, even before that, we were dealing with a chaotic collection of ideas that weren't together. We left a lot of value on the table for no good reason. And so one thing I would do is I would look at certain concepts that are just disproportionately important. You know, I didn't learn about Chesterton's fence until, I don't know, 2016, maybe even later, right? Chesterton's fence is an incredibly important principle. The precautionary principle is incredibly important. The relevance that these things have to the battle between, and I don't even want to say battle, the tension between yeah. conservatism and progressivism, which is a natural tension. I think if you kill either of those things off, you end up in one disaster or another. So understanding that just because you don't know why something that we do is there doesn't mean it's actually pointless. And you damn well better keep track of what happens. If you decide something like the rules of interaction between the sexes, if you think, oh, that's just, you know, it's prudishness, it's oppressive, it's, you know, whatever force you want to attribute it to, and we're wiser than that, we know we're, you know, we're just primates, and let's just get over it and stop pretending sex is something other than it is. Okay, you know, there's not that there's no truth in that, there is some truth in it, but when you get rid of all those rules, mm-hmm. you invite a whole lot of chaos that you didn't anticipate, and it is incumbent on you at least to track the consequences of the change and see how they match with what you thought was going to happen. If we had done that, right, if we were comparing the world of 2023 with the world of 1960, we could say, oh, there are some things that are quite a bit better. And then there are a whole bunch of things that are a whole lot worse, and we could start looking at cause and effect and say, actually, we could get the best of both of those worlds without paying the huge price we do by, you know, drawing a line here.
But is the inherent problem with that is that that's just not how humans organize or actually respond to things. So, for example, you could say, like, gay marriage to me was a completely just mission in that it was equality for people to live the way they wish. There probably should have been a discussion around it while going, okay, well, what's going to come after this then? And now this radical trans thing, which has nothing to do with equality and now is an assault on science and biology and blah, blah, that there should have, you're basically asking for, well, can there be like a postmortem on the good things so we don't let in the bad things? But it's almost just not how humans operate, right? We just look then for the next thing. And that, I guess, is the problem.
You're right. This is exactly how we do things.
I get one show.
No, you're right on target. But notice this. We embrace stuff because we see some problem that's galling to us and we want to solve it, right? That's the progressive instinct. And so we tear apart some rule that seems antiquated to us. And we notice that, you know, yeah, we've liberated ourselves in some way. And then 20 years later, 30 years later, we discover, holy crap, we liberated ourselves in this way, and then we constrained ourselves in some other way, and we have to do a net analysis, and that the carnage is tremendous if you did that. Mm-hmm. If you did it one thing at a time, it would be bad enough, right? The needless losses of doing it that way would be intolerable, in my opinion. But when you do it on every
right,
front.
We're doing it this way now, instead of occasionally kind of moving up the ladder or something.
We are revolutionizing our civilization each decade, which means you don't get time to even figure out what the consequences of the last change you made are before you're somehow onto some next monumental change. There is no, I mean, anybody who has gotten good at, let's say, making a car run knows you can't do this, right? If you have a problem with a car, it's not running, right? You change one thing at a time and you figure out which thing causes it suddenly to run. Now you know what the problem is, you know what to do. If you say, well, you know, the car doesn't run, it could be the starter, it could be the alternator, it could be the battery, it could be the wiring harnesses, and you change them all and it still doesn't run, you don't know that you didn't change the thing that was broken and introduce another thing that wasn't working and that it's now not running for a whole new reason, right? You can't do it that way. So one of the lessons here is the rebellion into conservatism is largely right because we've done a lot of foolish things and we've done it too fast and too many of them, but it cannot be allowed to silence the progressive instinct because the way we got here is through progressivism.
So what would be left that the progressive instinct should be looking at then, right?
Interesting. I would say, you know, I've, like everyone else, I've seen a tremendous amount of evidence suggesting that the story that we've been given on climate is not a true story. It doesn't mean that there's no problem, although that's within the realm of possibility. But that fact...
I veer more towards that at this point, because I think we've been fed so much nonsense on so much that it's just not... If I'm looking at my hierarchy of things I'm voting for and thinking about, it's not in the top 10.
You just said the thing, though, which is... If you look at the kinds of bullshit we've been fed over a wide range of topics, this looks more like that. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, I guarantee you that the story of climate that we are being given is saturated with bullshit. Okay, it can't help but be saturated with bullshit. For one thing, it comes from an academic environment that we know what would happen to you if you discovered climate change wasn't that big a deal. And you tried to publish it, we know what would happen to you. So that tells you, you can't look at the stuff that's coming out of that discipline and say, well, you know, the science is pretty clear because you didn't see any science that went in the other direction.
Right.
That's one thing. But the problem is, the fact that somebody loaded that story with bullshit does not tell you what the baseline would look like if you took the bullshit away, right? I know I was promised... that Kilimanjaro would be free of glaciers. I know that I was told Glacier National Park wouldn't have them. I know I was told there'd be an ice-free Arctic, and I know none of these things have happened.
And so, by the way, before that, we were told about global cooling.
Absolutely, and I remember that. I remember that well. So one doesn't want to miss a signal that something important is happening, and one doesn't want to assume that because some academic environment, especially one like the study of climate, which is so thoroughly based on models. Now, I've been saying forever, models are not a test of anything. They can't be.
Yeah.
The best they can do is they can generate hypotheses that you then need to test. And we are using them as if they were a test of something, and we're panicking ourselves, and we are threatening to upend our civilization over ideas that are probably just false. But you asked me what we would keep if we were... interested in not just simply sidelining progressivism. The top one on my list would be environmental concerns that are about stewardship of a planet, which I feel we are morally required not to degrade. We have an obligation to give the next generation and on into the future a planet that is equivalent of the one that we were given.
By the way, I think that's a message that most conservatives hear. I mean, the word conserve is in there, and conserving the environment is part of that. I think there's a twofold problem now. One is the sort of river of bullshit that you just described. And then the second one is they become so skeptical of government, the idea that even if they believed that the river of bullshit wasn't 100 feet of bullshit, that they'd still say, well, the government can't do anything. And I'm extremely sympathetic to that argument.
Me too. I mean, the fact is, the government is not on our side. It's in the hands of people. I don't know what they're thinking. It looks to me like they're destroying a planet that they need to live on also. But whatever it is that they're thinking, they are not wise people, and I do not want to see them empowered with regulatory capacity. But it doesn't mean that if we manage to make it through this bottleneck that we are facing, that the degradation of the planet is not a top priority. It really needs to be. And this is hard to convey if you have a cursory relationship with the natural world. If you like it, you visit it, and it's an aesthetic joy to you, but you do not, let's say, return to the places that you went as a younger person and note the radical decrease in certain species. If you don't have that kind of longitudinal sense of what's taking place, then you may not realize how rapidly we are degrading the place. And it's not 100%. We've done some, you know, when I was a kid, I never saw a bald eagle, right? I see them all the time now. I've seen them on, you know, I've seen them in the last 2 days here in Florida. I see them at home in the Pacific Northwest all the time. We rescued that animal from the brink of extinction. And you could say the same thing about sea otters. You could say it about elephant seals. There's no shortage of creatures that we've actually, condors, you know, I've actually seen them in the wild. This is incredible that we were able to do that. But each of those cases are things that we set about conserving intentionally, and it was not a small effort. And the number of cases that I could describe to you, just from my own experience, of creatures that I remember well, that I haven't seen in a very long time, that's a longer list. Hmm. And it says something about the rate at which these environments are actually coming apart.
How worried are you that people's brains will have so been blown apart by TikTok and algorithms and gender confusion and neo-racism, and the list goes on and on, that even if you sat here and gave me the one sheet, here are the solutions, we checked them, did everything you could, that there is not enough brain power left, that the next generation is just so blown apart in so many different ways that there just won't be enough to fix this, that people don't understand what freedom is, that they can watch mobs rampage through their cities and think the bad guys are good guys, like that everything is so upside down that the cavalry just ain't coming.
Well, I think, unfortunately, there's more to that than I would like. But I also, you know, in the heyday of what was called the IDW, we all stood on stages and watched hundreds or thousands of people cheer for rational discussion like they were, you know, looking at the Beatles. It was crazy that they were so enthusiastic. Nuts. And I don't think that they were there for the nuances of epistemology. I think they were there because they were cheering on rational people who cared and were willing to discuss the finer points of what mattered. So I think we need to separate out the question of, are people going to understand the nuances of climate well enough to be able to spot rational policy? No, but our system was designed for them not to have to. The problem is really the capture of the system, mm-hmm. which means that it's not in the hands of people who actually represent the public. It's in the hands of people who represent, at the very, you know, moneyed interests is probably an antiquated way of thinking about it, but rent-seeking elites who have hoarded power for themselves for obvious reasons. If people heard folks who really represented their interests and were interested in doing the heavy lifting of figuring out what's true, even when it's counterintuitive, and doing the right thing, they would be enthusiastic for it, because frankly, I think everyone is panicked over the fact that there seem to be no adults.
I'm guessing you're at least a bit of a sci-fi guy.
Yeah.
You must be. So I constantly am bringing up basically every Philip K. Dick book and The Matrix and the, you know, Terminator and Skynet's going to turn on. It sort of feels to me that we're like right before that scene in the movie right now. What's different about us now is that we all know the books and we all know the story. You know, in all those movies and an iRobot and everything's, the robots become sentient and all these things, they sort of have never really thought about it beforehand for some reason, or there's a little bit of it in some Asimov books. But it's like all of us, we've been warned about all these things forever, and it seems to me we're right at the moment where AI kind of won't need us, we'll be the problem in the system instead of the solution to the system and all that. But I don't see a good way around it.
Well, forgive me, I don't remember what we talked about in London well enough to know if I said this to you, but we are simultaneously facing the battle of, it's not even our lives. It's clearly the battle for the future, whether or not we're going to have one in some meaningful sense. It is that scene in the movie. And it is confusing because it isn't even one movie. It seems to be all of them simultaneously.
Right, right.
And we are facing, you know, it's not aliens. AI is involved in some sense, you know. I mean, I'm even talking in the pre-ChatGPT days, the algorithms, the fact that they were trying to accomplish something that was counterproductive from the point of view of humanity is clearly involved. So anyway, it is that moment. And there are a couple of odd facts. One, yeah, we all read the books or saw the movies. That's not the same thing.
But we still seem to careen towards it, right?
We seem to careen towards it because that's not, we think that we are synonymous with our conscious minds. That's the thing that read the books and saw the movies. That's not the thing that acts, right? The conscious mind has a limited role to play, and it's the part of the mind that plays tennis that needs to understand the lessons of those books and movies and start acting. And it can't because it hasn't been through the training course, right? The equivalent of, you know, what we do for special forces, where you know how to keep your fear in check at the point that you're staring at a ferociously powerful enemy that presumably has access to every email you ever wrote, right? So people need to steel themselves, and then they need to figure out who they are in those movies, right? And I think they will feel better when they do, right? Because on the one hand, yes, they will end up calling attention to themselves in the eyes of whatever it is that we're up against. On the other hand, they will not be paralyzed by fear. And so anyway, I think people need to convert over into an action.
Do you think it's possible that when we pulled that curtain back, that it actually is just the old washed up wizard and not the all powerful Oz? Because that's basically what you're saying, that what people are afraid of is if they saw what was on the other side, we'd be so cowed or we're imagining something that's so scary that we'll never pull it back. On the other hand, maybe the whole lesson was that when you pull it back, there's not much there. Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I think it's going to be a mixture of things. Because let's take, and I know people are sick of talking about COVID, nobody more than me, but I think we need to talk about it because...
The fact that you showed up here in a mask is still so frankly disturbing.
Yeah, a Fauci mask.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly.
The lessons of COVID are profound. The most important lesson of COVID is that outgunned as we were, not understanding what this virus was, what the treatments that they wanted us to take or the preventive measures they wanted us to take were, what the drugs that they seemed hell-bent on preventing us from having access to were. Without understanding the game, we outfoxed them and their narrative collapsed. People are now aware the shots were very dangerous. There were drugs that worked that they were not allowed to access. There were contributing factors like vitamin D that were important that people who claimed to be obsessed about their safety never bothered to tell them about. The virus didn't come from bats in nature. It came through a route that could easily have been prevented by wiser people. So how did people get wise to this in light of the fact that this thing owns every major broadcast network, every newspaper, every medical school, every university? Well, I don't know. It happened on podcasts that shouldn't have been possible. And what that does suggest is that there's a good bit of the shriveled old man behind the curtain, right? That as powerful as this force was, it wasn't especially smart. It did not especially understand us. It is now, I swear, looking for a rematch.
Yeah.
If you look at what it's doing in the World Health Organization, what it just did with the FCC, what it's doing in Colorado with a new program to infect bats with dangerous human pathogens, it looks like it wants a rematch on every front. So it wants new rules that will prevent us from doing that next time. we need, it's leveling up. We now need to level up. But were we to level up, here's the good news that I know you're asking me to tell you about, which is, forgive me for saying it this way, Goliath fucked up. Okay, and Goliath took every intelligent, courageous person with integrity and shoved them all onto our team simultaneously. So we don't have the technology, we don't have any of the materials that one would want to fight this battle, but we have absolutely every player that you would want. So we outfoxed them once, we need to level up. We cannot assume that what we did last time is going to work in the same form. It will not, because Goliath is very stupid when he sees something new, but he learns, and he's learning. So we need to go after him with an improved game plan. And if we do, my sense is actually we can stay ahead of him.
You know, it's interesting because you said one of the big problems is how atheism sort of crept in over the last 30 years or whatever it is. And then the way you just described that was actually kind of biblical because you're talking about David versus Goliath. And I wonder if you think, as a biologist who is largely a secular person, you're Jewish. I think Heather's Catholic, or is Heather Christian? Or
Her father was Catholic.
Father was Catholic. I only mention that because I think that something weird is going on with a little bit of the code as it relates to the Jews, as I'm seeing a whole bunch of Jews kind of more into religion over the last 2 months and into the traditions and some of that stuff that you were asking people not to throw away before.
Yeah, let's just put it this way. This is not new with me. I freely use these metaphors because I think they're fundamentally important. And interestingly, you heard me say Goliath. I didn't say David because there's a literal version of this story that probably did happen. David was not the killer of Goliath. Goliath was probably a pituitary tumor giant. And he was killed by a guy named Elhanan. And those who wrote the Bible composited characters because David needed an origin story. But anyway, the point is, I don't expect anybody else to do this. I think it's cool if you can and think it's worthwhile. But, you know, I don't have to resort to anything supernatural in order to maintain contact with those biblical stories and what it is that they're trying to tell us. They do need an update. Goliath is not an individual anymore, clearly. David or Elhanan is not going to be an individual either.
Right, it's going to take more than a slingshot because this thing has a lot of firewalls.
Right, but again, the real lesson of COVID is that when we got our bearings, we ended up remarkably powerful relative to this force that had us so thoroughly outgunned.
Well, that's why I mentioned the religious part, because I'm starting to think it's that survival is baked into the code too. That, right, like the oppression is baked into the code, and then the survival part is then always baked into the code too.
Yes, and then there's one other element. No, it's a good one, I think. I honestly believe that the thing I'm calling Goliath, the force that opposes meaningful change, does not understand and therefore does not anticipate the action of people who have courage and integrity and insight. It can't fathom them because it's not built of that kind of stuff. And so it keeps misjudging what we'll do, what will cause us to back down. And as long as it keeps misjudging that, then we have a lot of room to maneuver.
It's interesting because that's why I talk about Elon as much as I do on the show, because I think if you would have said to Elon 10 years ago, you'd own Twitter, you'd be in this free speech fight, you'd have, you know, the ADL calling you an anti-Semite, like the list of craziness that everyone now knows, I think he'd say, what are you talking about? That's completely insane. I'm trying to get us to Mars. I'm building this cool car, blah, blah, blah. But he, I think, is sort of the avatar for what you're talking about there, the brave person that, like, doesn't know exactly what they're going towards, something like that. But then he's like, I better buy this freaking Twitter thing because I see all the danger. Much like a professor that's like, oh, I'm going to be hunted off campus because I'm going to not bow and the rest of it.
All right, well, I'm going to take a risk because I think, frankly, time is short. I think you're right about Elon. I don't know for sure that you are, but I think you're right about what he's trying to do and how he ended up there and how it would surprise him. I had a meeting with him. I flew to San Francisco, and I had a meeting with him. And he said it had been a very good meeting, and he wanted to meet again. A series of events unfolded over the course of the next 24 hours. My Twitter account got commandeered. Maybe that was organic, maybe it wasn't. I don't think, I know Elon had nothing to do with it. But anyway, I reached out to him and tried to alert him to this because I was concerned that he and I had private communications and he didn't want, you know, I don't think there was anything compromising in them, but he didn't want them in the world and he needed to know that this was there. And he ended up blocking me after having this meeting, and I remained blocked. Now, the reason I raise it is because there's a defect in all of those players that I mentioned who have all been shoved onto the same team, right? They have some incredible strengths, and I have to tell you, there's been a lot of pain inflicted on us for standing up, but the camaraderie, the discovery of people who were up to the challenge, their coming together as a coalition has been extremely rewarding and dwarfs any suffering that might have come along with this.
Yeah, but it sounds kind of corny, but I mean, that those 3 days or whatever it was we had at ARC, to see everybody together again and all be like, we're still alive, we're still here.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
The problem is that all of those people who have the characteristics that I listed, that are courageous, that are insightful, and that have integrity, they have a lot of lone wolfness in them, which means that they have a defect. They're terrible at confederating. And my concern is, I'm watching Elon. Now, maybe Elon isn't what he appears to be, but to my way of thinking, he probably is. I think he's got a desire to save the planet. It happens to be a moment at which saving the planet is not a ridiculous thing to be focused on.
And he happens to be kind of the guy that can do it.
You know,
kind of like
if
that.
Anybody's got fuck you money, he does.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you would want. And he also, you know, is very insightful. I see him as very strategically clever. But I don't think he's any good at confederating either. And my little story where, you know, he blocked me, it's like, look, hey, Elon, there aren't that many people out here trying to advance the ball who have something meaningful to contribute to the team. We have to stop tripping over each other. So
maybe I feel like I'm missing like a tiny piece of this story, which is what do you think he blocked you over? Not to totally sidestep us here, but I also can get access to him probably. So it's
let's put it this way. What happened was, so I believe that Dark Horse, that Heather and I have faced a whole bunch of suppression that has not yet shown up anywhere. The Twitter files.
That's the podcast that you guys do. Yeah.
Right. That's our podcast. Yeah. And there's a reason that we still, you know, we are demonetized to this day. YouTube demonetized us. I believe they were going to throw us off. Joe Rogan held an emergency podcast, and you know, YouTube hasn't messed with us since. But they didn't remonetize us, and you know, got rid of more than half our income in one fell swoop. Anyway, the point is, there has been a lot, and we know actually that decision happened in the C-suite at Google.
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever's going on, there was a lot of direct interference with us. Why? Because a lot of what happened over COVID went through Dark Horse. And the reason, you know, was Heather and I are both PhD biologists who, what we were doing before, frankly, May 23rd of 2017, shortly thereafter, I showed up on your podcast, the first major venue I was on. What we were doing before that date was we were taking complex phenomena and making them simple and intuitive so students could learn and use these ideas. When we started to do that with COVID, when we started to take it out of the realm of here's a bunch of stuff you can't understand and leave it to the virologists and the epidemiologists and the public health authorities, and the answer was no, actually you can understand it and some of what you're being told isn't right, right? When we started to do that, and then we started to interact with people like Robert Malone and Peter McCullough, Pierre Corey, and then those people went on to affect a huge audience, right, largely on Joe Rogan's program, that changed the narrative. And so I think something has meddled with us in a particular, in a unique way, because frankly, there weren't that many people who could bridge the scientific to public.
Sure, but connect that to Elon blocking you, because on one hand, I think you're saying he's the good guy in this story, so I think there's one missing piece.
Here's the connection.
Yeah.
When I contacted Elon after my account was commandeered, I was trying to point him to things about my account that does not behave normally. And incidentally, in the conversation that I had with him.
I was unfollowed from you right before that. Remember, I contacted you and texted you now, and said, hey, you were one of the first like four people I ever followed on there.
So that's interesting. Yeah. It could mean something. Yeah. I'm not sure what it means. But I was trying to convey something to him, which is, I think when you know, because you talked to Elon about the things he was discovering inside of the crime scene that he bought.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he discovered was that there were lots of mechanisms that caused things to be deboosted that weren't labeled as such. And so he kept finding more and more levels. And I was trying to convey to him, look, I think you will find something special when you figure out what happened to us. Now, maybe that's wrong, but I wasn't talking to him privately about this for personal, selfish reasons, though I would love the problem to have been solved for those reasons.
Of course.
I was telling him that because I believed that in his quest to make Twitter into the new public square in which, that he would discover those things at the point he chased this down. So he then blocked me saying, stop spamming me, which was a very strange thing for him to say in light of the conversation that he and I had had.
A lot there. I'd be happy to talk to him about that.
Maybe he'll send him his clip, or I'll
message him. But
let's put it this way. Let's say that I've got
it all. But is your fear? It's not that you were spamming him, like blowing up his feed. What you're really saying, in essence, is that you were a little too ahead of something in the game at which the speed is played, that he may not want to be involved in that just yet. Something like that.
Well, that's possible. If I take everything at face value, okay, I was trying to tell him something about the machine that he bought, and I'm taking him at his word as to why he bought it, what he wanted to accomplish. I was trying to help him in that, and it involved things that I can see in my account. And, you know, he told me that, you know, one of the things that was true before he bought Twitter, he had the most engaged with account, and that he could feel that the way the account worked was unnatural. So I'm reporting something that he had experienced personally in his own life. It is possible that he took my messages to him as my thinking that he was like customer service or something, and that frustrated him, which I would get. But my point is really this. No matter what happened there, the idea that people who are interested in, you know, who are aware, for example, of the importance of even a single social media platform functioning in a free and open way with respect to ideas, right? On Dark Horse, we have the phrase, zero is a special number. What that means is, if you can turn a single social media platform, a single newspaper, or a single university so that it functions towards its stated goal, you actually stand a chance of fixing the system, because if there's one social media platform on which you're treated like an adult and you can exchange ideas freely and discuss them back and forth, nobody's going to want to be on the ones in which you're treated like a child.
Right. So in essence, that's why he's hated the way he is at the moment, or why the system reacts. So that's separate than whatever may or may not have happened with you guys.
It's why he's in the bullseye. But I guess the point is, if we are talking about the fact that what he is doing stands to change the whole system for deep game theoretic reasons that, as far as I know, we're the only people talking about, then it doesn't make sense for us to be tripping over each other, right? Even if I misread the signals that were going on in my discussion with him, then the answer is, okay, so you said, hey, stop spamming me. Message received. It didn't need to become a You know, this was the block actually before Elon even started talking about the fact that blocks were no good.
So without making it so specifically about you guys, because since we just don't know the answer to that, yeah, I get it. You don't know either. And I will ask him about this, and I'll send him this clip. Like, why not? Let's see what happens. Hopefully I don't get blocked. I don't think I will, but you never
know. But who knows?
But do you think there's a probably a biological answer for that, too, in terms of how we all operate, meaning that he's in a complex system now. The system's attacking him. He's getting some sort of like signal boost from other good forces within the system, but he can only be boosted so far because he can only do so much at once. So you sometimes want to put blinders on for some of the other stuff.
Well, this is what I was saying about the lone wolfness. For all of us who got into some interesting position in this battle because we were independent enough of the institutions that we were part of that when they went crazy, we refused, something like that. There probably is a built-in circuit that says, you know, don't affiliate with things that are too complex because you don't know what's buried in there. And what it means is that, you know, how do you create the pack of lone wolves, right? A lone wolf is the opposite of a pack. At the point that the lone wolves are the only ones standing and they need to become a pack, the answer is they've got to now resort to a skill set that they pretty obviously don't have.
Right.
So they have to bootstrap it. And I guess that's what I'm saying is this is the moment at which all of us who have found ourselves ejected and singled out and remain standing have to figure out how to do the thing that we don't know how to do. And it's not surprising that that is going to involve a lot of missteps, and it's going to involve practicing, and it is going to involve us. I mean, there are people who do this very naturally. They just they're not here.
Bring everybody into the fold and figure out some of it. I think I was trying maybe a little more than some of us to do some of that. Obviously, it didn't fully work, and I don't mean that as a pat on my back. Like, we all have our strengths and weaknesses and whatever. But do you think it's possible that this is what you're asking for sort of at the public layer of people is exactly what everyone needs at the private layer of people? Meaning what you just said to me is what every single person actually needs, not just the crazy 100 of us who are yapping on, you know, online.
Well, two things. One, I do think you deserve a pat on the back. You were doing unique things. You know, when you used to take various ones of us up on stage with you for some hybrid between comedy and political discussion, that was bridge crossing stuff, and it was really cool. I think about it a lot. I learned a lot in those few interactions.
The ones with you actually in some ways were the most fun because you really considered yourself a man of the left at the time and were very proudly saying it, and I was the lead the left guy, and my audience, as you would always point out, you'd always say to me, Dave, your audience is more conservative than you. So here we have tried and true conservatives coming to see me, certainly not a traditional conservative, bringing on you, a lefty, and we'd get standing ovations every time. I mean, it really was something.
It was great.
So I guess I'll pat myself on the back for that.
No, I think you should. But I also think there are many, this is now me pretending to be older than I am and trying to pass on some wisdom. There are many things in life that you don't understand how long the trajectory actually is, like healing. You know, I had an ACL injury, a tear, and it was repaired. And there was definitely a 1-year healing, but there was also a 5-year healing and a 10-year healing process. And, you know, I literally have to think carefully to remember which leg it was at this point.
You don't have a torn ACL right now?
No.
I have no ACL. It tore about 5 years ago. I never did anything, and now it's gone altogether. And yet I'm playing basketball tonight because of PRP and three braces.
I wrap it.
Yeah. I got the sleeve and the metal thing. I mean, it's like, nice. I'm like a transformer out there.
But. Well, I have it on the inside. And it's now, I've now forgotten.
And now you forgot. It's a beautiful thing, right?
But the point is, if you checked in along a 10-year trajectory, you would find that actually there was important stuff in that process going on the whole time. So what you were doing, and what we were all doing, you know, IDW doesn't exist. But it was a very important stage in something that I think doesn't have a name at the moment. What you were doing was somehow a prototype of what you are doing. And I think there's meaningful progress if you look across that whole arc. And I appreciate it, and I think it's important stuff, so keep it up.
I should probably end right there, but I'm not going to. That would be an interesting ending to this. It's interesting because on some hand, you strike me suddenly as you're very, like, you seem more of a realist than ever at the moment or something. Like, I can't quite tell if you're sort of not depressed, if you're dejected about the direction, or I sense also a determination in you that, like, but we will beat this thing.
Couple things. I think what happened when you and I met, we met as I was dragged center stage in the woke revolution, or fighting the woke revolution, fighting against it. That was not my first rodeo, which I think probably had a lot to do with why I was successful in that. That was chapters ago, right? We're now on to the post-COVID chapter. I cannot emphasize enough how important each of these major events is in building a model of what these fights are about, what tools are useful in conducting yourself during them, what the enemy is like. And in these cases, the enemy is, there are overlaps. But I think I am, I've now seen enough that I know this doesn't get better if we don't fix it. I'm deeply embedded in the complex systems aspect of this enough to know that I'm 54. I have two kids. If we don't fix this, then, maybe my kids find a way to live out their lives in some decent form. Maybe they find mates and produce offspring, and they find some way to protect those offspring for their lives. But it's not a good story if we don't fix it. And so I guess I have just, the thing spends a lot of time trying to spook us about what's going to happen if we stand up to it. And I'm not sure that it's bluffing, but what else is there?
Right. Well, that's what it is, I suppose. So when you look behind the curtain, it might be the all-powerful Oz. It might be a shriveled up old, used car salesman. Might be something in between. Either way, you got to give it your best go, I guess, is the point, right? Like, that would be the point of humanity.
Yeah.
And like, what's the choice? So we find out you're wrong. Okay, you did everything you could. That's still pretty decent.
I mean, it goes back to your point about those novels and those movies. Because we all understand so deeply who we're rooting for. It's not ambiguous. We know who we're rooting for. We know what we want them to do. And then when we find ourselves in the position where it's us having to make those choices, the point is, well, you know what you're supposed to do because you saw the movie, right?
Right. If Neo had put the thing back in his head, then you would be like, all right, I'm not so into this.
That's why they gave us Cypher.
Right.
Cypher is the cautionary tale. And so at some level,
he
the
just
point
wanted that
is,
stake.
Look, it's not going to be the Hollywood version. It's not going to look like Neo. It's not going to involve the fancy battle where you're dodging the bullets and the slow-mo and all that, That's not what it is. But to the extent that The Matrix is Plato's cave revisited for a generation that needed an update, The point is that what must happen is still clear. The non-Hollywoodness of the story can't dissuade you. And, and I think, I'm hoping that people will realize that they're not going to feel just totally at ease when they confront their fears over standing up and what happens if you do. In fact, they will spend a lot of time wondering what comes next. But there is a part of them that is not settled watching this happen and not standing up that will just simply realize that it doesn't have a lot of choice and it doesn't want a lot of choice, right? You're facing an epic battle that isn't even just for, you know, Western civilization. We are literally talking about the future of the human race and whether there will be one. So if that doesn't get you to stand up and face the enemy, irrespective of what it is, you know, if the enemy is all powerful and it's going to destroy those of us who stand up, then the point is what that will do is it will destroy everyone else shortly thereafter. So you're not saving yourself
right,
that much.
Right, you still have no choice.
You might as well face the thing. And the lesson of, frankly, the woke revolution and COVID and much else is that actually you might be surprised that you end up on the winning team and that feels pretty good. So, you know, I think it's just time.
That is the ending. Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. Don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. If you're looking for early and exclusive content, you can join me on Locals at rubinreport.locals.com.